Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. Hour two, as I am with you until 10 o'clock this evening. It's Hub Arkish sitting in for Lawrence Holmes. Lawrence has the day off. I don't know if he's just celebrating Martin Luther King Day or taking a vacation day, or I hope he's not under the weather. I was in last week because he wasn't feeling well, but I'm pretty sure Lawrence will be back with you tomorrow evening. Again, I'm here until 10. We've been having a lot of fun so far. Mike Petraglia, who covers the Patriots out in Boston, stopped by. My partner on the Bears pregame show, Patrick Manley, was just here. And now we're going to head down to Mobile, Alabama, and welcome in from Pro Football Weekly, Eric Edholm. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. And I'm actually just assuming, Eric, that you have made your way to Mobile. Are you still in New Orleans, somewhere in between? Or?
No, yeah. I mean, based on the last 24 hours of travel, and it would be a safe assumption to say that I didn't make it here. But I did. I've arrived. We just had the Senior Bowl introductory press conference, and I made it out in one piece.
All right, there you go. Well, we'll get to that in a couple minutes, but you were in the Dome yesterday. I believe it's the Mercedes-Benz Dome in New Orleans, and all that came with it. Obviously, the most talked-about thing coming out of the game, which I think is unfortunate, is the non-call on the obvious pass interference. I think it's also unfortunate that people want to pretend that that's what cost the Saints the game. It was a horrible call, no question about it. But let me get your take on it as it was happening in real time and what was going on in the stadium.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, the headache that has just subsided in the last few hours I had nothing to do with Bourbon Street. It had to do with the noise in that place. It was as loud as, you know, whistles included. It was as loud as everybody heard. But, yeah, I mean, that play in particular, you know, immediately I thought, no flag. Are you kidding me? It seemed obvious in real time. It seemed even more so when we saw the replay. As you pointed out, there are plenty of steps along the way where missteps, I should say, the Saints had in you know, blowing a 13-0 lead, you know, blowing a 20-10 lead at home, momentum shifted back in the third quarter. You know, plenty of spots they can look at outside of that call that cost them. However, you know, they get the call half the distance of the goal, first and goal, Rams have one timeout. They can pretty much bleed the clock and kick an even shorter field goal than the one Will Lutz made to take the lead. So, yeah, it was a big one. There's no question about it, and you're right. That is the talking point that we're kind of left with in what was a really good game.
Well, yeah, it is, but I think that it is also convenient to point out that had Sean Payton not been throwing the ball on first down with that stupid little 3-yard toss, he wouldn't have needed any help. As a matter of fact, they shouldn't have thrown the ball at all. The Rams only had two timeouts left. He could have just bled the clock on his own, kicked that field goal with about 11 seconds left, and the game's going to end anyway. Let's even move beyond that, though, is, okay, you got the bad call. It happens. Don't let the Rams go down and tie the game. Or after that, you win the coin toss in overtime, go win the game like the Patriots did, or at least don't throw a pick in your own end. So, you know, I get it. It's a horrible call, but stuff like that happens. And it's, to me, it's just kind of a shame that the Rams are getting docked for it because it wasn't their fault. And it's almost like people want to, or at least some people want to, delegitimize their trip to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think that's an important part of it. The Rams faced adversity in a way that I didn't frankly know they were capable of. I knew they were a super talented team. I knew they were a somewhat resilient team, you know, coming back after that bad stretch that included the loss of the Bears late in the season. But, you know, this was a different level, and Jared Goff really impressed me. You know, he started slowly, wasn't getting much going. The noise clearly affected him. From, you know, late second quarter on, he played a whale of a ball game, made some big-time throws. That You know, that go route to Cooks down the left sideline was brilliant. And there were a lot of other examples where he looked great. And you're right about the Saints. I mean, you know, that defense had some okay moments in the game, but for the most part, they came up small in a couple of big situations. So, you know, Ryan Ramczyk, the right tackle, giving up an easy, you know, pressure from Dante Fowler on the interception. I mean, maybe Breeze needs to see that a little better, but back to the call that, or the point that you made, that the running the ball prior to the non-PI call, Sean Payton gave a very sort of convoluted answer about how there was a pass play tagged on the end of it. They kind of checked it. When I asked Breeze about it, he didn't seem to remember that being the case. So I don't know if that was just him forgetting the sequence at the end of the game or Payton maybe telling a little yarn. I don't know what.
Were you in the room for Payton's press conference, or were you out chasing somebody else?
I missed the first question or two, but yes, I got in there.
What? I mean, I only saw what they gave us on television, so I don't know if he showed any grace at all. It sounded to me like from the beginning he was just whining about the call. Did he have anything decent to say about the Rams?
Yeah, at first it was, hey, you know, it's terrible to lose that way. I just got off the phone with Al Riveron, the head of officiating, and here's what he told me. And then he went into that whole spiel, and he answered a couple questions about that right away, as you would expect. A couple times he did say, listen, this is as good a team we've faced all year. We had a tough battle with them early in the season. But, you know, I mean, he made sure to credit them and actually spent a lot of time kind of crediting their defense. But, you know, it's easy to take the sound bites from the missed call because that's the low-hanging fruit. I wouldn't say he was gushing about the Rams, but he certainly made sure to at least mention a good, healthy amount of respect for what they did on that field.
All right, let's move on to the Senior Bowl. I know for some it is their favorite week of the year. It is difficult to follow sometimes with guys coming and going. It is always interesting in that we know that the first round is going to be probably 70-80% underclassmen who are not invited to the Senior Bowl because of it's the Senior Bowl, you know, for various reasons. And yet there is a ton of talent out there, and it is a place for guys to really start to help their draft stock, really the first chance that they get as the college draft scouting season begins in earnest, really last week with the East Rush Ryan game and now this game. What, if anything, is news out of that opening press conference you just attended?
Yeah, not a lot. Obviously, it's Jim Nagy, the new director's first time here running the show. He's a former Seahawks scout. He spent some time with the Patriots and a couple other teams. So, you know, I think people are kind of looking to see how the game works this year. He's been very active on social media, really wants to build a buzz around the game and that sort of thing. Drew Locke, the Missouri quarterback, was one of the players they had up there talking. A linebacker from Auburn also spoke. But, yeah, I mean, we're starting to hear the names of some of the players who are bowing out of the game, which happens. It's always kind of an 11th hour deal. It started last week. It'll go up to maybe tonight. But yeah, there have been a few who have left. Josh Allen, the defensive end, he plays the same position as Khalil Mack, essentially. He's going to go somewhere in the top five. And I think his agent said, let's not go down there and blow an Achilles. So he bowed out of the game. You can understand that. But other players who've bowed out, like, you know, Locke's receiver, Emmanuel Hall, a deep threat, why he bowed out, nobody's saying and nobody knows. And those are the ones that, you know, scouts will look at and say, did you have a legitimate reason, an injury, you know, a personal situation? Was there something going on? Or are you just saying, I don't need to go down there? That can be viewed as a negative too, somebody who doesn't want to compete maybe. So for a player who's injured most of his career or big chunks of his career, that's something that's going to be brought up in the interview process.
Yeah, Josh Allen is 6'6", about 240 pounds. He's a big edge rusher out of Kentucky, a top 10 pick for sure. You can understand, you know, why. I mean, it's yep. Frustrating. You'd like to see him down there competing against the other guys. But it's kind of common sense, too. The kid who comes to mind for me is the Michigan tight end, Jake Butt, who 2 years ago played in the Orange Bowl, I think it was, and blew out his knee and missed his rookie season and wasn't the same this year. So the decision to play in these games is interesting. And yet for so many of these kids, because the underclassmen tend to dominate the high rounds of the draft, it is important to these seniors to be there and let these scouts see that they're worthy of high picks.
No, I think you're right. And, you know, I mean, they get an extra round of interviews with teams. They get one-on-one work with the coaching staffs of this year. It's the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan, and the Oakland Raiders, John Gruden. So, you know, you go back and look at the scouting staffs. Bears were down here, you know, three, 4 years ago, whatever it was. there's a pattern of those teams ending up drafting players that they coach this week, because, you know, it's not just watching them on the field. It's seeing them in meeting rooms, seeing how they respond to coaching, how quickly they pick up an offense. That's the crazy part. They're learning a playbook in about 4 days, 5 days, really, before the game on Saturday. So it's a lot to absorb. You really get intimate one-on-one time with these guys. You get to see how they perform. Are they good teammates? Are they good people? And I think that is invaluable, in addition to working out head-to-head, you know, O-lineman, D-lineman drills, cornerback, wide receiver, quarterbacks throwing the ball. I mean, last year, you could see a clear difference between Josh Allen, who went number 7 of the Bills, and Baker Mayfield, number 1 of the Browns, and the rest of the quarterbacks. There was just no doubt that they had more talent than any other quarterback down here. So those are the kind of things that kind of separate people, I think.
Eric, it's an interesting draft class when you think about it. Just not a lot on offense this year. I mean, there's some nice running backs. There's a few nice wide receivers, but it's a particularly shaky quarterback group. The offensive line is very thin. On defense, the defensive line is absolutely loaded, like we haven't seen in years. And as always, there is some pretty good talent at cornerback.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, the one position on offense there seems to be a little excitement is tight end. Tackle, offensive tackle looks pretty good as well, but I think you're absolutely right. The defense is maybe the highlighted side of the ball, and then D-line in particular. Now, maybe not quite as deep with the edge rusher group, but the tackles, the three techniques, the five techniques, the guys who play in the inside a little bit more, this is as good as it gets, I think. And maybe I'm forgetting a year where there was a bonanza at that position, but I really see, you know, a ton of players who – even if they don't necessarily fit the modern game of, like, you know, somebody with some inside pass rush ability, they're going to be such physical specimens, like Dexter Lawrence out of Clemson. Guy's like 6'4", 340, and moves like a dancing bear. I mean, he'll go high for that fact alone, and he's just one of a dozen guys who all kind of project to the top 50 picks or so.
Yeah, if Bears fans need a comp for Dexter Lawrence, think Ted Washington. He is of that.
Right.
He is of that frame and mold. As I mentioned, it is not a good year to be looking for a quarterback. Obviously, the Ohio State kid is moved to the top of the class. I'm based on just 1 year, really, at Ohio State. I'm not saying that you mentioned, of course, the kid from Missouri. You got Daniel Jones from Duke. I mean, there's some nice players. But this is going to be the year that a quarterback doesn't go first overall, I would think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Unless there's a trade or some unusual circumstance, and the Arizona Cardinals have their quarterback in Josh Rosen. I mean, I think you're right. I still feel like there are going to be some guys drafted fairly high at that position who are maybe, you know, for teams who are just a little bit antsy about not being able to get the veteran they want or not wanting to wait for, you know, Jake Fromm and Tua Tagovailoa and Justin Herbert next year. There's going to be an antsy team that maybe jumps the gun a little bit. So we still may see 2, 3, 4 first-round quarterbacks. Do they, you know, in a normal year, would they go that high? I don't know. Like, if last year's class was somehow merged with this year, there were 5 QBs in round one. I think the only one who might drop out of round one is Lamar Jackson, if you included these players this year. So, yeah, it's going to be it's a very beauty in the eye of the beholder class is how I would say it. But Jones and Locke are two down here this week who I think can help themselves out quite a bit.
Well, and the wild card, of course, who you will not see this week, but we will, I think, see at the combine is Kyler Murray.
Yep.
I'm guessing there's a lot of buzz around him, even though he's not down there.
Yeah, there's a lot of players on defense who faced him this past year, and even going back to his brief time at A&M. Or brief time when he was backing up Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma. And so I'm fascinated to get their take on Kyler Murray because, no matter what you think of him, I mean, he's the buzz guy in this class. I think he throws with such ease and he has such good arm talent. It's that 5'9", maybe. We still haven't heard, you know, his exact measurements, but let's assume he's 5'9" and 185 to 190 pounds. I mean, Hub, I can't think of how many quarterbacks have been in the NFL, period, at that position. I mean, maybe Doug Flutie or, you know, one of those guys back in the old days. It's going to be a problem for some teams. And yet there will be some club out there that says, I don't care. He's special. I want him. And I just have a feeling he's gotten some sort of inclination that he's going to be going in round one. I can't say which team. I don't know where. But I just have a feeling he's going to go somewhere at the end of round one.
Yeah, I mean, the only guy I can think of that small is Flutie, and he, of course, had to spend a decade in Canada before he came back and had a little bit of success in the NFL, but not tremendous success. You know, Jeff Garcia was small and went to a few Pro Bowls, but he was at least 5'11 and a half, 6 feet. You know, the other thing that's interesting about Murray is everybody I've talked to tells me that even with his $4 million bonus from the Oakland Athletics and the fact they may give him more, he is a great, he's a magician with a glove, but apparently he's not much of a hitter. And so even though he's got that signing bonus, there's no guarantee that he's a top Major League Baseball prospect yet. And, you know, he does seem serious about taking a shot at the NFL.
Yeah, I have a friend who works with a Major League Baseball team, and I said, give me the lowdown on this kid. And he basically said, it was a surprise when the Oakland A's took him as high as they did. It was not expected that he would go that high. First of all, you know, some people wondered whether football was his love. But at that point, I think people sort of felt like, okay, he's a baseball player, but where do you take him? And, you know, I don't pretend to know the baseball draft or how it works, but I understand, you know, contract demands are part of it. I still, you know, go back to what my friend told me, which was that he shouldn't have gone that high. And that all this talk about him being the next Ricky Henderson is just overhyped and is just not accurate information. But still a good prospect and still somebody who could have probably made a nice baseball career. He still can chase that route if he wants, but everyone I've talked to seems to think he loves football and is going to do everything in his power to make the football route happen. So I guess we'll find out probably right before we head to the combine, because, you know, spring training starts February 14th or whatever. I mean, that's when we'll know, I think, whether he's in or out.
All right, Eric, one more before I let you go. Explain to our listeners why the Senior Bowl is really a lot of fun to cover for media. It is an NFL job fair. Every unemployed coach in the NFL is down there looking for jobs. Every coaching staff is there. It's very much like the Combine. Every front office is there. But there, it's the one event where there may be more employed and unemployed NFL people than there is media.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Right. This is unemployed media members, unemployed coaches, scouts, they all come down here. The weigh-in is tomorrow. There'll be about 500 people in a room, and I think only about 350 actually have jobs. So that's a pretty good indication. But the practices are really where it's at. The Worry Hub, rain, 100% chance on Wednesday, and they're talking about moving it indoors and maybe not letting media watch. So it could get a little testy down here by the end of the week. I may be a little edgy if that happens.
All right. Well, you hang in there, man. Hopefully, I'm sure you'll get the job done. I will be talking to you as the week goes on. Thank you for taking time out for us tonight. That is Eric Edholm, everybody. You can read him 24/7 at profootballweekly.com. Follow him on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. He'll be reporting from Mobile all week long. We're going to take a quick break here. When we get back, your phone calls. I want to visit with you. Got about a 45-minute window here where the guests won't be checking in. Need you guys to make the show. 312-644-6767. Again, 312-644-6767. Let me know whatever's on your mind. Looking forward to talking to you in just a moment here at The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you all so much for being here tonight. I am Hub Arker, sitting in for Lawrence Holmes. Lawrence has the evening off. I will be with you until 10 o'clock this evening, taking your phone calls, bringing in more great guests in addition to the lineup that we've already had. We'll get back to the text line as well at 67011. Real quick, the text here. Hey, Hub, has there been any mention of the scuffle after the game between Marcus Peters and Sean Payton? I saw Peters acting the fool, which he is the best in the league at. I didn't realize that it was with Sean Payton. I haven't heard anything about it. I don't think it was really a scuffle so much as Marcus Peters is hands down the biggest jerk in the National Football League. I mean, this guy, the smartest thing Kansas City did was getting rid of him this year. He was the best cornerback in football. Now, he had an off year for the Rams this year. He got torched by Michael Thomas in the first Saints game and did nothing but bitch about it and dare him to try it again. And he got torched early again yesterday. and he's just, I don't know what's going on with him. But, yeah, I saw him getting shoved a little bit by somebody. It looked like shoved away from somebody. I didn't realize it was Peyton, and I haven't really heard anything else about it. But if Peters is involved, you can pretty much bet the house it was his fault. So I'll see if I can find out more about that for you. Let's get to the phone lines. Jim is in Rockford. Jim, I appreciate you dialing us up. Hope you're having a good night. What can we do for you?
Yeah, how you doing, man? It's a really honor to talk to you.
Oh, thank
you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Just a couple questions that you brought up, though, with some of the guys you were talking to earlier. Some about the play calling and with the Kansas City game and then also with the New Orleans game. But then some about the Bear game real quick, too. And how, you know, it's not like with Parker, everybody kind of blames the kick on him for the Bears losing the, you know, when he donked it off the goalpost and everything like that. And then, you know, and like you said, and I have to review, it's not just his fault why the Bears lost that game. And I kind of agree with you on the other two games, too, from yesterday. It was more than just the refs calling, too. I mean, it was some of the goofy play calling and stuff like that and everything else. And I saw, see what you think about it, and I'll hang up and I'll just listen to you.
Well, Jim, thank you. The point that I've made on that Bears game, Chris Dickens and Mike Chen are here producing, doing a great job as always. We were talking about this before we started the show tonight. Cody Parkey did not lose the Eagles game for the Bears. He blew his chance to be the hero. It takes a team to lose a football game, and the Bears did a number of things that also kept them from winning that football game. Chief among them, you've got the number one defense in the NFL, and you got a 15-10 lead, and you give the ball with about 4 minutes to play and 60 yards to go. You don't let them go down and score a touchdown. Patrick O'Donnell, who I thought had a pretty good year punting the football, had a good night that night, except for a 36-yard punt to set that up. It was an awful punt. And then, you know, after that, Trubisky does a great job, puts you in position. Yeah, you got to hit the 43-yard kick. But to say it's the only reason they lost the game is ridiculous. You look at the Saints game yesterday, it was a horrible call. There's no question about it. But they shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. They shouldn't have been throwing the football. After the call, they had a chip shot to take the lead, and they had a minute 40 to keep the Rams from going down and tying the game. They couldn't. The Rams went down and did it. Then they won the coin toss in overtime, had a chance just like the Patriots to go down and win the game. You got the highest scoring offense in the NFL, and Drew Brees throws a pick. Now, it was a great defensive play. It was deflected. I'm trying to remember who it was in the line who got a hand on it. But whatever, the point is, it's the Saints lost that game, not the officials, you know, and the officiating was awful. You got to do something about it. Now, look at the same situation with the Patriots and the Chiefs. On the Chiefs' final score in regulation, there was a call that was just as horrible as the non-pass interference in the Saints' call. That touchdown was a pick play. It was blatant. It happened right in front of the official. It wasn't even close. It doesn't get called. Belichick gets nuts. He throws an iPad, and then he goes back to work and comes back and wins the football game. So I think the message here, Jim, is that one play, one player cannot win or lose a football game. They play for 60 minutes. There's all kinds of plays during the course of the game. Some are harder to take than others, but the officials are not why the Saints lost that game. Bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Single-game tickets are available for Penn State, Rutgers, Minnesota, and Ohio State. Buy now at nusports.com. Let's get out to Lakeview and talk to Mike. Mike, how you doing?
Good, Hub. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Hub, I watched Super Bowl 51, and I watched Dan Quinn lose his team the Super Bowl because of poor clock management. I watched yesterday Sean Payton lose the game because he couldn't see that if he ran the ball, the clock would have gone down and made it nearly impossible for the now NFC champs to win that game. I watched Matt Nagy at the end of the Bears playoff game this year not take timeouts that could have secured the victory for the Bears, potentially. What do NFL coaches do to prepare themselves to manage the clock in high-pressure situations? Because it seems like there's a lot about offense, a lot about defense, a lot about special teams, and very little about one of the most important aspects of the game, managing the clock. I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, Mike, it is something that they work on. It's something that they do run drills every practice throughout the year, even OTAs, ends with two-minute drills and how they manage it and when they clock the ball and when they call timeouts. Theoretically, they each have a style or a theory. some just do it better than others. And sometimes coaches outsmart themselves. Now, I disagree with you a little bit on the Nagy thing. I think he had problems with clock management over the course of the season, but I didn't have any problem with what he did on that final drive. There's some plays I might have tried differently, but I don't think his clock management was a problem there. There's no question that decisions to throw the ball instead of run it from Dan Quinn in 51 and from Sean Payton yesterday hurt their team. Sometimes it's just the confidence in being willing to do that. Some of these guys, it's gotten very trendy in the league these days to talk about how aggressive you are and how these guys, they're going to go for it. They're going to take the risk. Well, that's smart sometimes. Sometimes it's not so smart. And it clearly wasn't smart when Sean Payton called that 3-yard, whatever it was, to Michael Thomas. It ends up incomplete and gives the Rams a timeout they didn't have. That's what forced him into throwing the ball again on third down. If they'd gotten the call, it would have bailed him out. But there's no guarantee they complete the pass. Matter of fact, if Nickel, the three names, I forget what they all are, if the kid turns around, he probably intercepts the ball. And so he did play it poorly in addition to the non-call. But it's as much Sean Payton's fault to be in that spot as it is the officials for missing the call. So they do work on clock management regularly, Mike. There's no question about that. And it's really, in some respects, as much an art as a science. Some do it better than others. I thought Tony Romo, we'll talk about Romo a little bit right after this break because he's interesting. I think he's good. I think he's really good. He's gotten really good really quick. He gets a little too carried away from me sometimes, sounds a little too little kiddish in the booth occasionally with the excitement. But boy, his insights were outstanding, particularly in that game yesterday. And he talked about this. He said the guys who know how to do it don't use their timeouts until they get inside of a minute. When you've got two or three timeouts, no matter where you are on the field, until you get down to a minute, you've got time because you've got those timeouts in your pocket. And I thought that was really interesting. He explained it. You saw how Belichick used those timeouts, and the Patriots do it as well as anybody. So there is a talent to it. These teams work on it, and some are just better than others. We'll take a real quick break here back with nothing but your phone calls. We've got a full board. We're going to get to you all in just a moment here on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Third and five. Winston ball game.
I got to put Gronkowski out wide. They've got to get him. He's your guy when it's one-on-one. They finally got him. There he is.
On the top of the screen.
If he's doubled, you're going to throw inside right here to Edelman. You just look up there and pick him.
Here they come after Brady. He goes down the field to Gronk. Turns around, makes the catch. He saw what you saw, Tony.
You know, there's a perfect example, guys. I've been calling NFL games for, I don't know, what, 35 years now. And you're careful with that. You don't want to sound foolish by predicting something and not even coming close. But when you think you know what you're seeing and you call it and it works out, you live for those moments. And Romo had like five of them yesterday. I mean, he really did a good job analyzing that game, calling it. He was prepared. I think the guy's come a long way in just a couple of years. I wish he wouldn't get quite so giddy on occasion, quite so obvious on occasion, but hey, we all do that. I thought it was just a really impressive broadcast for them, and they, Jim Nantz and Tony Romo, are the guys who'll be calling the Super Bowl this year, so we'll get to hear from them again 2 weeks from yesterday. We've got a full board of calls, so let's get to it. Tiny Burger is in Lansing. Tiny, thank you for calling. How you doing?
I'm so good to hear your voice on the radio. Thanks for taking the call. I had a question about that phantom first down, and I'm sorry I don't have Grotstein's encyclopedia retention of plays, but I think it was a first down. They were out of timeouts. I believe it was a Giants game. They gave him a first down, and then there was a then they spiked the ball, and then there was a big mix-up, and then everybody came off the field, and they had a chance to get the field goal team on there and kick a field goal before halftime. And I never heard anything about that.
Tiny, I wish I could help you, but I'm not sure exactly what we're talking about. The Bears did play the Giants this year. I don't remember a situation quite like that. I apologize, but all I can do is if you can get me a little bit more background so I know exactly what the situation is, give me a call back, but I'm afraid I don't have an answer for you on that one. I'm really sorry. Let's go out to Oak Lawn and welcome JC in. JC, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing there, Hub?
Good, thank you.
Thank you for taking my call, mm-hmm. Sir.
Sure, what's up?
Look, Hub, I agree with you, man, as far as the teams winning or losing the game. It takes a team effort.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, man, it always is good to know that you got a hero coming off the bench with a leg that can put it through the uprights.
Mm-hmm.
As the Super Bowl award-winning coach, with the former coach of the Indianapolis Colts, he said about Vinatieri, he said that's money we got on the bench, and we strongly believe that he's going to take us over the hump.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears, I mean, it's obvious. The Bears needed that. I mean, after you put it out on the field, your offense and your defense has left it on the field. Now it comes down to what you got on the bench, and you pay them handsomely. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, the expectation is that he can deliver to get you to the next round, man. Mm-hmm.
Well, JC, like you said, we agree. Yeah, I've got no argument with that. I'm not defending Cody Parkey in any way. I was puzzled by the signing, quite frankly, when they did the signing, because they made him the third highest paid place kicker in the NFL, and he clearly only had 48 or 49 yard range. Now, he was one of the more accurate kickers in the league, so I just chalked it up to they want guarantees inside the 50, and that's what they're going for. They didn't get that either. It was a mistake. It was a bad signing. I don't know if you were listening. Patrick Manley was on with me about 45 minutes ago. We were talking about it. And of course, Pat is the greatest special teams player ever for the Bears, and he agreed with me, said he wouldn't bring him back. I wouldn't bring him back. I think it puts too much pressure on the rest of the team. So I absolutely agree that you know, it was one of the things that didn't go right this year. It was a mistake. But you know, I guess the point that I was making is that they still could have won the game in spite of it if they had done some other things that were available to them. And you had that same situation in those two games yesterday.
Yeah, you did, especially with the Chiefs, too, because it never would have come down to going to overtime, I thought, had the man not lined up in the zone, man.
Oh, well, the game's over then, yeah. I mean, they get the interception, they run out
right,
the clock.
Right, the game is over there, right. Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs can look at whatever they want to look at, you know, but you make a mistake. I mean, that poor kid, D. Ford, he's a free agent, by the way, and it'll be very interesting to see where they go with that, because they waited 3 years for him. He finally emerged this year. He became a big-time pass rusher, and now to have a mistake like that in the AFC title game, they got to decide whether to give him the big money or not. That'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on.
Sure.
JC, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Let's get everybody in if we can. Next up, it is going to be Charles, who's out in Aurora. Charles, how you doing?
Good, Hub. Thanks for taking the call. It seemed like the Bears became very predictable based on what running back was back there, whether they were running or passing. And everyone's talking about Kareem Hunt, and I can understand why they would or wouldn't sign him. If they don't, is there anybody with their first pick that they have in this draft in the third round that would be someone that would fit their system and be able to start? That's
well,
a realistic pick at that point?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that unique about their system that you know, it's that hard to find a guy who's going to fit. And, you know, the problem is that I got to double check to be exact, but I believe that pick is going to be around 84 or 85. I think they ended up, after losing early in the playoffs, 24th in the draft. At 12-4, I don't think there's anybody tied with them. So if they're 64, that would make that 86. It's going to be in the 84, 85, 86 range. Now, which backs are still there, I can't tell you. We're just at the beginning of the scouting season. I can tell you that the only backs that I think would even get considered in the first round this year are Josh Jacobs from Alabama, maybe David Montgomery from Iowa State, maybe Mike Weber, who's coming out of Ohio State. I think that's probably too high for him. He probably goes in the second round. Second and third round backs, kids like Damian Harris from Alabama, Daryl Henderson from Memphis is really interesting. He's a kind of a Kareem Hunt lookalike in terms of size and style. You got Justice Hill out of Oklahoma State. He's a little bit smaller, but the same type of back. Elijah Holifield from Georgia. The kid that could be very interesting is that Bryce Love from Stanford, had he come out last year, might have been a first-round pick. He chose to go back to Stanford, tore his ACL in October. And so now he's not going to be able to work out for anybody. You don't know what you've got. I think he'll still go you know, third, fourth round. It's a risk because you don't know where he's at from the surgery, but he'd be a really nice fit for what they want to do, and that may be a name to keep an eye on. And then, you know, that's just, there's half a dozen other names, but until we at least get to the combine and better, get a better handle on these kids, I'm afraid I can't really tell you what round you're going to put them in.
Thank you, sir.
Charles, thank you. I do appreciate it. Let's move out to Crystal Lake. Kyle's on the line out in Crystal Lake. Kyle, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Jose. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Absolutely. I've been driving around a lot today and listened to Score, obviously. And I've heard a lot of talk about overtime rules and modifying it. It's not weighted so much strictly on a coin flip. And I had a thought, and it's and maybe this is not strictly, or maybe this is not for the entire season. Maybe it's just strictly for postseason play. But possibly adopting a modified college football format where you have a coin flip, both teams possess the ball, and that's your first overtime. So if the score is still tied after each team possesses the ball, you go to a second overtime, and it's a coin flip, and continue that process until the score is 7-3, 3-0, 7-0, what have you. I just feel that that would be the most diplomatic way, or not diplomatic, a democratic way of having a playoff, or having a playoff in postseason where both teams possess the ball, regardless if there's a touchdown scored first. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that.
You know, Kyle, I'm somewhere in the middle. I never understood why they changed the rule to say if one team scores a field goal, the other team gets the ball, but if one team scores a touchdown, the other team doesn't. It doesn't make sense to me. Both teams should get to touch the ball in overtime. The flip side of that, though, is offense all that matters in overtime? Doesn't defense matter? And so to me, it's really not complicated. Both teams should be guaranteed at least one possession in overtime, and at the end of those two possessions, neither team has taken the lead, then the next score wins. To me, that's fair. I mean, you know, you got to rely on your defense as much as your offense, and I think we overcomplicate it. But what I don't understand is why the league felt that a field goal wasn't good enough to win without giving the other team another chance, but a touchdown isn't. That's the part that bothers me.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the call. I mean, sometimes I think we try and get a little too cute. It's not that hard. I'm sure everybody doesn't agree with me, but that's kind of how I look at it. Anyway, let's get to, it says Dan out in Hayward, Iowa, but I got a hunch this may be Darren in Hayward. And who is this?
This is Darren.
How you doing, Darren? I knew it was you. Come on, buddy. What do you got?
Okay. I got a good question, couple of questions about these assistants that Chuck Pagano is hiring, like this cat from Arizona, I believe he's at. And I would like to know who in the heck is a defensive back coach. And one more thing before I let you go, and it's been bothering me a lot. I don't want to hear nothing about Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. He is not. If I had a pick right now, Hub, I would take probably Don Shula, and then I'd probably take George Halas, and then probably the coach out of San Francisco, Bill Walsh. Mm-hmm. That would be my top three coaches. I'm going to hang up and let you talk.
All right.
Thank you.
Darren, thank you. You know, we're all entitled to our opinion. That's what makes sports talk so great. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach in the history of the game, hands down. Not even close. I mean, not only for what he's accomplished, but the era in which he's accomplished it. Now, that's my opinion. That doesn't make me right and you wrong, but that's kind of my response to that one. As far as the coaches the Bears have brought on so far, DeShea Townsend is going to be the secondary coach. Was a pretty good football player, won a couple rings in Pittsburgh, has some history with Chuck Pagano. Remember, Chuck Pagano's specialty is the secondary as well, and so I think Townsend looks like a really good hire. He's worked with some other very good defensive backs. He's played the position. He's got the rings. I think he'll bring real credibility, and I think it's a positive hire. Today, they added Ted Monachino, and Monachino's another guy with a lot of history with Pagano. He was his defensive coordinator in Indianapolis. He had some tremendous success in Baltimore working with linebackers out there. And so, again, looks to be a real positive hire. The reality is we don't get to know a lot about these assistants until we get to meet them, watch their work a little bit. But so far, two very logical hires that come with good resumes and good credentials, and there's no reason to be concerned about them. We'll see how well they do. Got to give them a chance to work before we start grading them or forming opinions. Let's get back to I thought we already talked to Mike in Lakeview. Is this the same Mike or a different Mike in Lakeview? Mike, it's your turn again. Same guy?
Hi. Is there an imposter Mike going on here?
Oh, is there a different Mike?
From Lakeview.
Okay, how you doing?
Listen, with all due respect, you know, the political correctness is fine. And the you know, twisting, you know, what people have to say, we win as a team, we lose as a team. But two facts remain. If that call isn't made, the call in the New Orleans game, New Orleans is going to the Super Bowl probably today. I don't care what else happened. They're going to. So the question is now, what do we do about this? And, you know, tell the guy in Vegas that lost $500 that, well, the rest of the game counted. He's not going to want to hear that. The officials are responsible. There's too much on the line, too much civic pride, too much money, and everything else. If an obvious call is made that affects a playoff game, it has to be addressed. Number two, if Parkey hits the field goal, we win. And by the way, I think the Bears would beat either of the teams that are in the Super Bowl because they have a far better defense than either team. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hang up.
Okay. Mike, I wanted to ask you one question before you hung up. So you believe that the only officiating call that was missed in the Saints-Rams game was that non-pass interference call. I mean, that's the problem with your premise. I mean, if what we're saying is that everything else was perfect and that was the only mistake in the game, then you start to have a little more weight in what you're saying, even though there is no guarantee the Saints would win the game, even if the call is made. But now, what you got to do if you want to go that route is you got to go back and fix every call in the game. And how are you going to do that? You know, I mean, you may not even be in that situation. The Rams could be up two scores if they hadn't missed six other calls. I don't know. I'm just saying that's the reality of it, okay? As far as where the Bears are at, I agree with you that the Bears have the ability to beat either one of those teams. They proved it against the Rams, and I think they could play with the Saints. But we didn't see that game, and so what would have happened, I can't honestly tell you. You are absolutely right. They need to make the officiating better. They need to eliminate mistakes like the ones that were made yesterday. But there's no way to make them perfect, and you're going to get some of that, and that's why these teams have to take responsibility for their own mistakes as well. I don't think we're disagreeing so much as that's kind of the fine point I'm trying to put on it. Guys, I've got to take a quick break. We do have another guest coming up at 8 o'clock. Really looking forward to getting the Rams side of the story, which we're going to do in a moment. For Kevin, Mike, Ricky, everybody still hanging? Guys, you can hang on for about 10, 15 minutes. I'll get right back to you. You can call us back because I'm going to have another wide open window for calls at about 8:15. But right now, we're going to take a quick break, have a guest come in, tell us all about the Rams, then we'll take more of your calls in just a moment. Here at The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.